Okay, Parshas Bishalach, which is a parsha that has it all. It has drama and action, it has music, and it has comedy, as we will see in our focus today, our focus on the second Aliyah, a very brief Aliyah, but packed with major themes. So we'll try to see as much of it as we can. And just to begin with, maybe to reiterate a point that was mentioning a few days ago before Shir started, but to see in this context, so we find once again just references throughout from Parshas Shmos until now that Paro's heart was hardened, and that's what brings us to this point that our Aliyah starts with Paro chasing after the Jewish people together with his army, because once again he has been given this intensification of his resolve through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bestowing that upon him. Nechbadti libo, I made him heavier, I made him stronger. It's a theme that we found throughout. And it's a topic which the Rishonim struggle with to understand in light of free will. And we mentioned a little bit earlier in the week, I had mentioned this in Shul on Shabbos, that we were talking about the question that's come up all over America, the grammatical issue of whether the tefillah for the president and the vice president, whether the language should be changed, because the language as it exists is anasi v'esmishnehu in modern Hebrew is masculine for both words. And now if the vice president is female, so perhaps the change should be made to the language, because in modern Hebrew, Mishnehu is masculine, maybe it should be Mishnoso. So in the context of discussing that, it brings up the whole issue of the tefillah itself, which is relevant to this question, because the free will of Paro, which seems to be challenged here again and again, is a topic the Rishonim struggle with. Rashi in the Parsha talks about it, the Rambam, Sefer Yikarim, other Rishonim discuss it. And one idea that you find is that even to whatever extent free will is a given for people in general, for world leaders it's different. So we have this idea that the Lev Melech, at the heart of the king, is in God's hands, that God imposes his will on world leaders, and being that all of the trajectory of history is affected by their decisions, so it can't be simply up to them to decide what path to take, given its implications. So if that's the case, the truth is that seems to be the premise of the tefillah that is recited in the shul, that if we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to guide the decisions of the president, the vice president, the king, whatever country we're talking about, the premise seems to be that indeed we are acknowledging that it's something we can daven for. And davening for other people's personal decisions normally seems to be a problematic idea. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos tells us that Beriah convinced her husband Reb Meir that he shouldn't pray for his enemies to die, he should pray for his enemies to do tshuva, which was successful. But the Chazanish and others bring up the question of how is that possible if we say HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyiras Shamayim, that everyone has to make their own decisions as far as Yiras Shamayim, as far as their morality. They're going to do the right thing or the wrong thing. That's the one thing that God doesn't influence. So how can you daven for someone to do tshuva? That's a question on that Gemara, and there are various answers that are suggested. But we see it here also in this tefillah, that if we're asking God to direct the decisions of the rulership, so it's apparently working off this premise that indeed, that that's what happens sometimes, that the decisions of a government have to be sometimes nudged in a certain direction because they impact all of world history. So that's also very valuable for us to keep in mind here. We've had such a heated election season in America, and passions have run so high. And while it's important to be civically involved and to vote and to work as best as you can to contribute to the decisions of society in our democracy, at the same time to recognize that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the show, and what happens is going to be up to him. And we can't let it get out of control. We can't let our passions overtake us. That itself is a lack of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's running everything. So that's a part of what we see here, that once again we're told that Paro is being influenced, and there are many other approaches that Rishonim have, which are perhaps more broadly relevant, but it's just a part of the context here, and it's relevant as well to what's on our minds. Zach, do you have a question?
I wanted to ask something, a really nice thing about Zonta. I did know that that it's all about what God is doing. God is on our side in Palestina, and that's the exact opposite of all the focus that political things want.
Oh, yeah, very well taken. So if you're going to put tenascinum into the air, it's not the best recipe for getting the best results. Very well taken. Okay, so here, our parsha begins with that background, that Paro let the Jews go, but then he remembered he didn't want to let them go, and he was reignited in his passion to go after them, and he gets everyone together, and they chase after him, and with that, chase after the Jews. And with that, that's how our Aliyah begins. That's how the second Aliyah in B'Shalach picks up from that. By Yirduful Mitzrayim Achareihem. This is Pasuk Tes, Yidal Tes. So Mitzrayim, as a unified whole, chases after them. V'yasigu osam, chonim alayam, kol sus rachav parav, ashav achilo, api achiros, v'fnei bal tzifon. So they caught them. V'yasigu osam. So who caught who? So the Mefarshim have different interpretations as to what this is reflecting here. Either it means that the Egyptians caught up with the Jews, or the rest of the Egyptians caught up with Paro, that Paro led the way and he got everyone to follow him, and they were able to make up for lost time, and perhaps that's what we're talking about, that they caught up with Paro. And that could explain, some of the Mefarshim note, that the Jews were described as being Lefnei Piachiros, and here it says Al Piachiros. So it's not representing the Jews, maybe it's representing the Egyptians, that the Egyptians are now poised to catch them, to be on to them. So the next pasuk continues with Pharaoh, he grieved. Vayisu v'nei Yisrael t'neihem, v'nei Mitzrayim nesach t'reihem, v'yiru ma'od v'yitzaku v'nei Yisrael Hashem. So Paro, he grieved. So the language you would have thought would be karav. So the idea of hikriv is something the Mefarshim also talk about, that maybe it suggests that he made a particular effort to catch them. He had to be mazaris himself. He had to strengthen himself in this effort. In the Medrash, in the Shmos Rava, it suggests that this reflects the fact that he did kiruv, that he actually made the Jews turn to God, that because he created this crisis, so that awakened their spiritual instincts. And no atheist in a foxhole, and you realize that you're really in danger, all of a sudden you turn to God. And he played a role in that, so he did a kiruv, unusual type of kiruv movement, but perhaps that's also suggested in this language. So here it says, Hinei Mitzrayim, we had the word Mitzrayim as a unit referenced in the previous pasuk, but here in particular it's apparently singular, Hinei Mitzrayim Noseya Achareihem. So the singular language is interesting, and Rashi comments on this, Kalev Echad B'ish Echad. So that might be a little striking, if that language sounds familiar. Where is that, where do we remember that from? K'ish Echad B'lev Echad. So that is something we're generally proud of. It sounds like that was what was said about the Jewish people at Har Sinai, at Matan Torah, that we said K'ish Echad B'lev Echad. So is that good or is that bad? Is that something said about the Mitzrayim also? Then it's surprising that we're so proud of that and not in Torah. So on the one hand, it could be making the point that unity is powerful in whatever direction it is. So if people are able to get together for a good cause, so then it enhances that. We say, Kinus Tzadikim Tov La'olam, and inversely, Kinus Rishayim Ra La'olam. So when there's unity among those who want to do harm, so then they're able to do harm more when they are unified. And yes, in the Hanami, it's the same language, but it's applied in the wrong direction here. But it's also significant in terms of direction. You may not notice right away that the words are actually inverted. So we don't say Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, like we said by Matan Torah, but here it says B'Lev Echad Ki'ish Echad. So is there a significance to the words being switched around? So Putner talks about this in his Pachet Yitzchok to Pesach, and he observes that there is a fundamental difference here, that when we say the Jews are Ki'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, we mean first that they're Ki'ish Echad, that they feel that sense of unity, that they're all a part of one body, that they're all one soul, and that therefore they're able to accomplish with that in mind. While here it's inverted, that it's not that the people feel like they are united, but it's that they all have a common goal. So because they all want to accomplish the same thing, so then they come together. So that's an alliance. That's not the same thing as Achdus. Achdus is a priori, you feel already that there is a connection and an interresponsibility, while an alliance, you have somebody else who just wants to accomplish the same thing. So you joined with them, but not because that's achdus, that's because you have a common enemy, perhaps, that you want to pursue. We know that the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, it contrasts the machlokus l'shem shemayim and machlokus shelo l'shem shemayim, and the good machlokus l'shem shemayim is described as Hillel and Shammai, while the machlokus at shelo l'shem shemayim is described as Korech v'Adato. So all the Mefarshim point out that it's not parallel. So when you talk about Hillel and Shammai, those are the two sides. When you talk about Korach and Adasso, it should say Korach and Moshe. Korach and Adasso is only one side. So many, many Mefarshim all hit on the same idea. They say that the Mishnah is phrased that way in order to tell you that even Korach and his people were not on the same side. That they may have been allied. They may have come together because they had a common goal. But that's not real achdus. That's not real unity. It's just a functional alliance. And that's what we find here also. So perhaps that's also an idea that's reflected in that language of Rashi. So what happens? So the Jews look up, as the Mefarshim explained, that they knew something might be coming up, so they were waiting, they were watching to see what would happen. So they're very scared. So they called out. So what does it mean they called out? So here, among the Mefarshim, there are different interpretations. So some say, and some read Unkelus this way, that it means that some, they were complaining, they were shrieking, they were very upset, so that's what it means by Yitzaku, they were crying out, while others understand this as tefillah. That's the way the Ramban understands it, they were doing the right thing, that they were asking for divine help, and that's why it's re-emphasized here, B'nai Yisrael, again, so the Ramban says, and it's also the Persian, understands it as well, that the point is to emphasize that they were acting as Bnei Yisrael. They were acting the way they should be acting. They were turning to God because of this tremendous crisis. And Sefer Lev Avraham, he has an interpretation here, which is saying a little different. It's not exactly how he said it, but it's somewhere along these lines, that the whole phrasing here of Vayiru Ma'od Vayitzaku Bnei Yisrael Hashem. So they were very scared, they were very afraid, and they called out to God. So it's possible to understand here. We said a few minutes ago, in a different context, Kol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Me'ir Shemayim, that Yir Shemayim is up to you. That's not something that you daven for somebody else to have, or something that would seem challenging to daven for somebody else to have, because the whole principle of free will would mean that Yir Shemayim is a personal decision. But at the same time, we do find that we daven for Yir Shemayim. We say that in Berachas HaChodesh, we do find such an idea. So when we're talking about davening for our own Yir Shemayim, we mean that we recognize that Yir Shemayim does require a conducive context, and it's a skill, and we could use help in getting there. So if we make that decision, that's what we want. So there is room to daven for Yir Shemayim, that he should help us in the skill and the muscle of Yir Shemayim, and help give us a context that's conducive and help support us in our goals. And Yir Shemayim is not only a Reishis Chachma, but it's also the antidote to all our fears. Quoted that somebody asked for Soloveitchik, he said, you rabbis, you're making all of our children, you're making them all terribly anxiety-ridden. You're telling them, Yir Shemayim all the time, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid of God. Isn't that so awful for them psychologically? As you're teaching them fear, and as the Rav responded, he said, one fear takes away all the other fears. But if you have your Shemayim in a perfectly developed way, so then you're not focused on being worried about anything else, because you recognize that that is what is guiding everything. So that's a high madrega. It's not so easy to be connected to your Shemayim in that sense, but essentially that's the goal, that one who really has that kind of your Shemayim is able to focus only on that and not be scared by anything else. So the Pesukim could be read that they realized that they were afraid. They realized that they were confronting this situation, and it was a tremendous pachad for them, and that they didn't want to feel like it was a pachad. They wanted to be able to have perfect Yirat Shemayim that should overcome all of that. So they called up to God, and they said, help. And again, that's what they should be doing, that they were seeking for divine assistance in their Yerushalayim. If you look in the Lev Avraham of the Blindfeld or something along the lines, a little different, but it's perhaps somewhat in that direction. So the next pasuk is a very major point of commentary. So the pasuk says, "Vayomru Moshe hamibli and kvarim b'mitzrayim v'kachtaru lamuspan midbar." Mazosa sisalano hotzianim b'mitzrayim. So what's wrong? You didn't have enough grave In Mitzrayim, she had to take us out here to Zion Mitzrayim. That's what happened. So that sounds like quite a chutzpah dik thing to say. It really doesn't seem very grateful. And indeed, the Gemara in the middle of Maseches Erechin on Daf Tezvav Meralef says this is one of the nisyonos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had. You know, Avraham had 10 nisyonos. The Gemara says also 10 nisyonos that the Jews imposed upon the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And clearly it doesn't mean that context being tested in the sense that we normally talk about it, but it's more like a parent might say to a misbehaving child, you're trying my patience, you're testing my patience. So too, the Jews acted in a way that kiviyachol had that kind of an impact, called a nisayon, which highlights the idea that this certainly seems to be a disrespectful kind of thing to say. At this point, after everything that Moshe has done for them, representing a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and their response is, oh, you took us out here because there weren't enough Kvarim in Mitzrayim. And the Ramban, in particular, is troubled by this because he understood that they were heading in the right direction spiritually here. As we saw in the previous pasuk, the Ramban understood what they were doing as appropriate tefillah, and that they were moving towards tshuva. We mentioned that medrash about hikrus. So if indeed they were oriented in a positive direction, so then why all of a sudden the chutzpah? So what's with Hamabliya and Kfarim? So the Ramban and other Rishonim also, and other Mefarshim, have a few different suggestions as to what's going on here with this comment. Some say they were just different groups, that there were some who were really focused in a positive way, and there were some who were complainers, and they're the ones who were saying, Hamabliya and Kfarim in the Chayim. That's what it sounds like from the Targum and Yonason, that there were the Shayim of that door who were expressing themselves this way. Others say that they said this earlier, but now it's being mentioned now, but now we're waking up and realizing. Others put it the other way around, that maybe they changed their mind, maybe they believed in Hashem, but they were being Choshed Moshe, so it was directly addressed to them. Or maybe it was that they changed in the middle, that they were davening, or some of them had been davening, but then as tension grew, and they didn't seem like they were getting the answer they wanted, because Pyro keeps coming, so then they started to lose their faith, and that's clearly a weakness, that's clearly a flaw, and extra points to Eli Levy for pointing out the synergy here, because the Ramban, when he mentions this point, so he uses that expression, Torah Shebi'itza, one of the major themes of this year's Masechta, the idea that the Sahara is compared to Chametz. Eli picked up that synergy, that you find that reference. The Ramban talks about it here, that this was a Yitzhahara kind of reaction, that when their tefillah wasn't immediately answered, so then they started to lose faith, and they started to have this complaint. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says there's an idea called Iyun Tefillah, and it's Machlokas Rishon, whether Iyun Tefillah is a good thing or a bad thing. It sounds on the surface like it's a good thing. There's a Sefer called Iyun Tefillah, which was assuming that it should be a good thing, but Rishonim, different interpretations, Rashi and Tosfos over there in Rosh Hashanah, a negative interpretation of Iyun Tefillah is that you daven with a mentality that, okay, I push the right button, I should get the right answer, and that's the way tefillah works. It's a vending machine. I put the money in, I should get out the product I ordered, and if not, there's something wrong. So the assumption, okay, so we did the tefillah, now how come all of a sudden it doesn't just turn into slow motion and have power go backwards, or have reverse the tape and have him go back to where he came from? How come that's not happening automatically? So right away they start turning and they start saying Hamabliya and Kfarim b'Mitzrayim, and that's perhaps what's going on here. Other Mefarshim have an additional idea. There's a lot in these a few words here. So other Mefarshim suggest that you see another phenomenon that we're all familiar with, that tefillah can sometimes be done in an automatic fashion where people are not really connected to what they're doing. It's mitzvah sanashim l'mamada, they're habituated to davening, so they're not connecting to what they're saying when they're doing that. Okay, crisis, everyone gather for Tehillim, everyone say something. And then, at the same time, they're expressing a tremendous lack of faith or cynicism, and it's not inconceivable to have that kind of contradiction in attitudes. And perhaps that's what we're seeing here. They were issuing a tefillah, they got the email that everyone should start saying Tehillim, that they should have a Yom Tefillah, but at the same time, the things that they're saying contradict that attitude of emunah and of turning to faith, and that's perhaps also what's conveyed here. There are those who have it also in the different types of interpretations. The Sam Derech of Simchas Lisbel Broyd, he thought that maybe this was actually an expression of introspection, that maybe they indeed thought that they deserved to die and that that was the plan, and then they were trying to figure out, okay, so then why should it be here? Why not there? Why were we brought out to, why were we brought out of Mitzrayim into the desert in order to die? The Ksav Sofer also has an interpretation that sees it a little bit more directly, that they knew that, okay, they were bringing the bones of Yosef for burial. They knew that Yaakov was taken out of Mitzrayim for burial. They knew there was such a thing to be taken out of Mitzrayim just to be buried. So they thought maybe that that was what this whole plan was, and maybe they were asking, maybe that was what was going on. And still they said, okay, there is such a notion, we know that, but clearly many, many of our ancestors were buried in Mitzrayim, so it doesn't seem to be worth all this, and is that really the plan? There are enough graves in Mitzrayim, we don't understand why, just because it seems to be an Indian not to be buried there, why is that enough reason to go through all this? But there is yet another comment which is particularly meaningful to us, and this is what I was referring to when we started. I said this parsha has drama and music and comedy. So the drama we're seeing here already, the music we know is what the whole Shabbos is named after, Shabbos Shira. That's going to be the center of the parsha. But also, where do you see the comedy? So first, a little bit of introduction. So it's no secret that Jews dominate the comedy field, and they have for many generations. The number of Jews who are involved in professional comedy is clearly overwhelming. And there's a lot of reflection, a lot of analysis from a sociological perspective. Why is it that Jews tend to have such a sense of humor? Why is it that they tend to excel in humor? So among the suggestions that sociologists make is that you have a persecuted people, so they tend to develop a sense of humor in order to cope. They tend to cultivate this kind of an attitude that they can crack jokes, and that's what allows them to survive all of these centuries of persecution. So the sociologists who say that, so they don't properly credit Rav Shamshon Yofal Hirsch, who made that point. Rav Shamshon Yofal Hirsch, on this pasuk, he says, what's going on? Hamabli Ein Kvarim. He says, this is not a serious statement. This is a sarcastic comment. And what are they doing? Not to be mechutzis necessarily. They're saying it in order to cope. They're making jokes as they're running, so they're cracking jokes. Oh, well, we had to do this because there weren't any graves in the shrine. It's a sarcastic comment. They did that in order to deal with the tension. And he adds there, he says, that's what Jews have done ever since. That's what Jews do. They develop a sense of humor. They crack jokes, and that's what helps them to survive. And it's a very crucial skill, as we know. And now we are Shloshim Yom before Purim, so we're already in the zone. And we know Purim is the time when that attitude seems to play a major role in how we observe Purim, the idea of the laughter and levity. And there's a lot to be said about that. And maybe between now and then, we'll have time to go into a little bit more of the role of a sense of humor. But the idea that it is a crucial tool to be able to deal with adversity is something that we indeed see. So we see it here, and that this is apparently what the Jews were able to utilize. And if that's the case, so we can figure out that to be able to provide a laugh to someone else is clearly a chesed, is clearly a tremendous kindness that you can do for somebody else, because if it really does have such an impact on your ability to get through the day, so someone else is having a hard time and you can make them laugh, you're clearly doing a huge mitzvah. And you don't have to just speculate. It's an explicit Gemara. The Gemara in Masechet Tainis tells us that the Rav Chazal was in the marketplace, and he saw Eliyahu HaNavi, and he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, he says, you have inside information. Tell me, among all the people here, who are Bnei Alma Da'asi? Who is among here who has a special chelik in Olam Haba? So Rav Navi tells Rav, he says, that guy over there and those two guys over there, they all have a special chelik in Olam Haba. So then he disappears. So Rav Navi's got to find out what's so special about these people. So he goes up to the two people in the corner who were highlighted and said, what do you do? How is it that you, he wants to know, how is it that they have this special schutz, that they are going to earn this great reward in Olam Haba? And their answer is that we're comedians. He says, Anshei Baduka, that we are people who know how to make jokes, and when people are sad, we make them laugh. And clearly that's considered to be a tremendous chesed. saw recently a book that put it very beautifully about how laughter is one of the easiest and most effective ways of giving to somebody. You could totally transform their attitude and their state of mind just with one line, if it's carefully chosen and effective line. Timing is everything, but if you can get it exactly right, you can totally transform somebody's mental state of mind, which is a tremendous thing. So the ability to transfer that tool to others is clearly a great asset. And the Rambam writes also, actually in his medical writings, the Rambam talks about what you can do for a patient, that one of the things you can do is you can make them laugh. So then that will do a tremendous amount to help their mood and to help their state of mind, and that's a part of the mitzvah Bikur Chol. So to recognize the power of having a sense of humor is a very important thing, especially as we anticipate Purim in a month. And that's what Refersh notes, that we see this already rooted in this pasuk, that that is a part of the idea. Okay, so then to continue, so the next pasuk says, So here, they're now taking a different focus, and they're claiming, oh, this is what we told you, the whole discussion of the Rishonim, when exactly did they say this, how did they say this, but they're saying that we don't believe in give me liberty or give me death. Right? That's sometimes the attitude, that if I have to be to choose between being a slave or dying, I'd rather die. So saying, no, we don't believe that. We're saying that we would rather have been slaves, or at least we'd be alive. We wouldn't have to deal with this. Now, of course, it doesn't necessarily address the more spiritually crucial ideas of chayrus, as we've been talking about, that we're focused on Yetzias Mitzrayim is not only that we don't want to be slaves to Paro, but it's that we do want to be involved in Avodas Hashem, and we want to be heading towards it, and that's a part of our whole theme in the recent sugya that we've been discussing, for a little bit of synergy, but that's not what they're tapping into right here, saying, okay, so we have to be slaves, so what's the big deal? Better than to die. And the Malbim comments that here you see that this is the second phase. So in the previous pasuk, they're saying, look, it looks like we're going to die either way. So if we're going to die either way, what's the point in taking us out? Better leave us in the giant to die rather than to die here. And now in this pasuk, they're talking on a different level. They're saying, and the truth is, we don't want to die. We'd have rather just stayed slaves. And why do we need all this? So the next pasuk continues. It says, Vayomer Moshe Elham Al Tiro. Is Yasuvu as Ru as Yeshua Hashem Asher Yaselachem Hayom Ki Asher Yisam Es Mitzrayim Hayom Lo Tzifu Leros From Od Ad Olam. So Moshe says, don't be afraid, but rather you should strengthen yourself and you should stand up straight and see the Yeshua Hashem that He's going to do for you today, and you're not going to see Mitzrayim anymore after this. So here. So first of all, as far as this whole approach, everything that he says here, so the Yerushalmi and the Maseches Tainis has a comment that there were actually four different attitudes among the Jewish people, and Moshe is a very effective communicator here, so he sums up in one sentence a four-level response that addresses all of them at the same time. So there were those, Yerushalmi says, who wanted to just jump into the ocean and just give up. So to them, he responds, no, he's got to move, stand up straight and recognize that that's not the proper attitude to have. There were those who said, let's just go back to Mitzrayim, and then let's just go back to where we were, and let's just surrender. And to that, he says, no, you're not going to see them anymore. You're not going to go back in that direction. And there were those who said they want to fight. They want to make war. And to that, he says, Hashem Yilachem Lachem. God is going to fight for you. That's what's in the next pasuk. And there were those who wanted to focus on tefillah, and to that the next pasuk tells you that tam tacharishon. No, it's not the time for that either. So in these two pasukim, there are actually four separate groups being addressed. That's how the Yerushalmi suggests that this was all a very efficient communication that Moshe was addressing on many different levels. The idea that you should see as Yeshua Hashem, some of the Rishonim, the Ralpag, and others suggest that there were Jews who didn't really have correct spiritual understandings yet, and they were influenced by Mitzrayim, the belief that there were gods who did good and gods who did bad, especially because Paro says that explicitly to Moshe, that, oh, your God, he's just out to hurt you, Chalila. So there were Jews who believed that, either because of Paro and the attitudes in the Mitzrayim, or because that was the Avodah Zarah idea, that there were gods coming from different forces, and there were those who would be doing bad things. So there were some who were concerned about that. So Moshe emphasizes, no, you have to understand there's one God, and he's there to help. He's there to do good things. So you should watch his Yeshua. So you should watch his salvation, and you're going to see that this is what's for the best. So this idea of lo sosifu, that you're not going to see the mitzvah anymore. So Rashi notes that this sounds like a haftacha. Right? It sounds like, don't worry, you're scared of these people, you're not going to have these people who have given you a hard life for a long time, you don't have to worry about them anymore, you're not going to see them anymore. That's what the language sounds like. But in the Mechilta, it brings that this is one of the places, this is a mitzvah, this is a yisur, essentially. You may not go back, and the Yerushalmi says, and look, is one of the three places that you find such an idea. And you find such an idea, there's a prohibition to go back to Mitzrayim. The Torah Tzvima writes here that it's not a contradiction to what Rashi says, that even though maybe it is a haftacha, maybe it is God promising, but there is a mitzvah to try to make sure that the haftacha takes place. So there is a lot of discussion as to what exactly this prohibition means. Is it more symbolic of something? Is it practical? Is it something that is observed nowadays? They're talking about the mitzvahim themselves, they're talking about the land. And there's a lot of discussion about this. And Sefer Chavetz HaSharon, he has, the contemporary Sefer Chavetz HaSharon, he has many, many pages about this. There's a lot of discussion in the Sfarim about this idea of a prohibition of going back to Mitzrayim and of living in Mitzrayim. They claim that the Rambam, who lived in Mitzrayim, so he used to sign his name and say that he is a violation of three lavin every day, because it's not right that he's in Mitzrayim and there's three lavin, like Yerushalmi says, that's what he was in violation of, and for whatever reason he felt that he had to be. One of my daughters, when she was significantly younger, I remember she made a comment, a very astute comment. She was, said that she heard me talking about Maimonides Hospital, Maimonides School, one of them, and she said, who's this Maimonides, whose name is on everything? So I said he was a great rabbi who lived in Egypt. So she said, how could he be a great rabbi before the Torah was given? So I said, no, not in Egypt during the Shibud. He lived in Egypt later on. So she said correctly, but you're not allowed to. How can you be a great rabbi and be going back to Mitzrayim? So that was the Rambam's time on himself, according to his claim that he used to say that he's not supposed to be in Mitzrayim. And the truth is, there's a lot of discussion as to what exactly the nature of such a prohibition would be. So that Sefer Yerayim understands that it means specifically to go back on the path. That's the language of the Pasuk in Sefer Dvarim. The Ramban understands more about not learning from their ways. Question of whether it's a mitzvah l'doros or not. Rabbeinu Bachi writes in Dvarim that it's not. The Rambam himself in Hilchos Melachim says that it is, but that the Pricharash adds to that, that maybe it's theoretically a mitzvah l'doros, but some of the mitzvahs that we have that are based on certain national identities. The Gemara says that Sancheiriv came and turned everything upside down. So, therefore, it's not practically relevant anymore, even if theoretically it would have been a mitzvah l'doros. The Rashbetz and the Zohar Akiya says that it also is contingent on the Jews being on their land. So there's a lot of discussion that the Svarim have about what the symbolism is. Does it mean only if you're going back on purpose? Is it about the symbolism of trying to reverse the Geula? Does it make a difference if you need to go for business, you need to go for other reasons of survival? The Mishnah Chinuch mentions the possibility that if you feel like that, that also connects to the whole idea of it being more of like kind of a klal event, that a person could find himself in a situation where he may need to go back to Mitzrayim, but then that's a problem. So even if it might be justifiable halachically, but it reflects some kind of a chisarim, and that is an issue. There is also a discussion about this idea of lo sosifu l'rosam, that you're not going to see them anymore. So that seems to be contradicted by what we see later, that the mitzrim, they wash up, and the Jews do see them. The Jews do see the drowned mitzrim. So doesn't that contradict this idea that you're not going to see them anymore? So the Zohar and a number of the Rishonim say Ibn Ezra, it's also a discussion in the Torah Tamima, that you have to assume that there's a difference between when they're alive and when they're not alive anymore. It's not called seeing them if you see them when they're no longer living. And there is a halachic implication of the Torah Tamima notes, but also it's a tshuva of Nod Behuda, where Nod Behuda discussed there were two brothers who unfortunately didn't get along and they fought terribly. And one took a shvua that he's never going to see the other one again. He's never going to look at the other one again. So then, unfortunately, they never reconciled it during their lifetimes, during one of those lifetimes. And one of the brothers died. And the other brother realized it was terrible that he didn't make up with him before. So he had a charata, and he wanted to come to Levaya and before the kvura and to ask him for mechila. And the question was, is he allowed to do that in terms of his shvuah? So the Nod Behuda says, yes, an explicit pasuk. So here we can see that, we can see from this week's parsha, that somebody who's told they're not going to see somebody's face, that if they see them when they're no longer alive, that's not called seeing them. And therefore, it's not a violation of his shvuah if he's going to see him at that time. And the essence of mechila doesn't make the situation any less tragic, but as far as dealing with halachic aspects, it's relevant there. The Torah Tamima doesn't mention that whole tshuva. He mentions that sometimes it might be a need, let's say, for another tragic situation, for edus, for an aguna. Somebody has to testify that somebody is dead in order to allow women to remarry. So there could be reasons to do it. So even if somebody took another natsu, so you see from here that that's not called seeing them. So, in any event, the last pasuk of Aliyah is very striking because he's basically, Kadosh Baruch Hu is conveying, Moshe is saying, that the Jews should be quiet, they shouldn't be davening. So that's a surprising idea. Hashem Yilachem Lachem V'atem Tacharishon, that you should just stop davening and God will fight for you. So, first of all, as Meryl Diskin points out, so don't we assume that we're supposed to daven in general, that's a good idea, and that especially if it's an eighth tzarah, especially if it's a time of great crisis, so then it would seem that everyone would probably agree that there's a mitzvah tefillah min haTorah. In general, it's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban and others, that the Rambam maintains, based on a Gemara in the beginning of the Masechet Tainis, it sounds this way, that there is a mitzvah of tefillah every day. We assume that tefillah, certainly in its format and its details of the three tefillahs a day, that that's a din d'rabbanan. And everyone would agree that the specific format and three a day is d'rabbanan, but the Rambam does maintain that daven once a day, so that's an obligation min haTorah av avodas Hashem b'chol levavcha, as we say in Kriya Shema, and the Gemara in Tanya says, Eizoi avodas shebalev, that is tefillah. So it sounds like from that passage you should worship God with your heart, with tefillah. So the Rambam understands every day there's a mitzvah. So other Rishonim don't agree, but they do acknowledge that there is a concept of an obligation of tefillah min haTorah, just don't assign it to a daily schedule. So when does it apply? It should apply based on, it should apply when a person is really concerned and is really in crisis. So then it seems like it's a mitzvah min haTorah to daven. So why is the message being conveyed here not to? So Meryl Diskin says, actually, it's bitmiah. He's not saying that you should be quiet. He's saying, what, you're going to be quiet? You're not going to daven now? Clearly, you should be davening. And that's something that is incumbent upon you at this time. That's how he understands. Others don't understand it this way. And among the suggestions that you find is a sefer called Aruga Sabosa, and it's not the classical Aruga Sabosa, it's a contemporary sefer, Aruga Sabosa, Malatara, is written by the brother-in-law, the Chavetel Sashar Malatara, where he suggests that it wasn't really an eighth Torah, because the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisodei Torah that the whole point of Yamsuf was to take care of the Mitrim as an onus for them, and so it wasn't really a sakana for Bnei Yisrael. So therefore, it wasn't really a situation that triggered this chiyuv of tefillah. His brother-in-law, the Chavetz Chaim Sofer Malter, also has a discussion about this, about the same issues, and he says that they knew from the whole situation here that they were going to be saved. So therefore, that doesn't make it a tzara. It's not a time that they should be focused on tefillah. The Mechilta notes that this idea that God will fight for you, so it says it's not just now, it's all of the time in the future I will fight your enemies. And the Neshach Chachma writes that the Jews could have been timing, okay, so now you have to save us because you took us out of the trying, you put us in the situation, so for sure you have to save us. So the response is, it's not just now, but even when you're not talking, even when you're silent, so God will also fight for you and will also save you. In the Lev Avraham, he has a whole observation about this whole sequence that should understand that we say, like the Gemara says, it was Daf Yomi not so long ago in the Sech Pesachim. If you're holding in the Daf Yomi to up your synergy points. So the Gemara was weeks ago, not so long ago, that talks about the idea that we have a perception of good and bad in this world, but really we believe that everything God does is for good, even if we can't perceive it in the moment, that we say that Komanda Av Rahman Alatavu David. So that's what this conveys also, that you think, oh my gosh, things are terrible because the Mitzvim are coming after you. So the whole message here is no, Hityatzlu Ruach Yeshua Sushem, you should see that God is saving you now, Asher Yatzel Lachem Hayom, what's happening today, and that's going to have an impact on the world. So the world's going to remember this, and it's going to affect future generations also when they remember that God does this tremendous miracle for you. So Kasher Yisam et Mitzrayim Hayom Lo Sosifu Rosam Oro, and you're not going to hear from them again. And ultimately, this crisis, which seems so terrible, is going to be for good. It's going to benefit you in the future. It's interesting to consider that point, because in recent years in the history of modern Israel, so much of the threat has come from Egypt. They don't seem to remember the lesson. But we've had Nisim again. We've had what we've seen in the history of contemporary Israel, tremendous hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu fighting our wars, Davka against Egypt, against the same Mitzrim who at least tried to come again, but kind of not the same. It's a little point that not, the national identity is no longer connected, but still the symbolism of the Mitzrim coming after us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing tremendous miracles is a fascinating thing. I'll also note that he recently published a sefer from Rav Moshe David Steinwurzel, who was the Babavar Rosh Yeshiva, and I believe he spoke in our yeshiva many years ago. It was published when that Kol HaOyin was initially set up. I think he came to speak then. It was published in the journal. I know many of our rebbeim had a relationship with him, and they recently published a sefer of his tradition and of his thoughts on the parsha. And he notes there that there is an idea here of a tikkun, that Chazal tell us that what we see later on in the parsha of Yashir, so that there is a corrective that Moshe sinned, so to speak, with Oz, and in this week's parsha he fixes it with Oz, the Oz Yashir, because in Parsha Shmos it says, May Oz bati el paro, that from the time I went to Paro, Moshe says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, you haven't been good to these people, you've put the people through very hard times. So that wasn't the right thing to say. So Oz Yashir, this week's parsha, is the corrective to that. There's a Beis Halevi, has a whole mahalach about that. We can talk about it in a future occasion. But Steinwurzel suggests that this is also a part of a corrective to that, because when it comes to communicating with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, we see there are different kinds of attitudes that are appropriate at different times. So sometimes it's just a time of tefillah, and sometimes we see that the great tzaddikim have understood that it's a moment to come with a little bit of an argument, to come with a little bit of a taina. So Moshe got it wrong in Parshas Shmos, that what he was saying then with a taina, you haven't done right by these people, that wasn't the right thing to say at that time. That was a time when tefillah just straight up was appropriate. But now there's room to take a different mahalach. Now it's not a time for Shavibu Tefillah. Now it's time to say, okay, so you brought us to this point and we're ready. So now we need you to save us. So that's what should happen. So now is not a time for extra Tefillah. Now is the time to come with your demand, so to speak. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fight on your behalf. So we said there's a lot in this week's parsha, a lot much more to come. So hopefully you'll be able to focus on that and to notice that. And call your attention just to a few things. So first of all, this is the parsha of Zekeli Manveyu. So the idea of Hidr Mitzvah is one that was very significant for us in that first sugya, about understanding whether there is a Hidr Mitzvah in the way you eat matzah, and eating matzah b'teyavon. So a source for Hidr Mitzvah is Zekeli Manveyu. So something to think about the whole lumbus of whether it makes sense to say that there is a Hidr not only in beautiful objects, but also in the idea of how you do something, and that would probably correlate to a question of how you understand the purpose of Hidr. Is Hidr about evoking a reaction from other people? Is it about impressing other people? Or is it about our own commitment that we are displaying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So if it's about commitment, then it doesn't necessarily only have to be in terms of visible beauty that other people can perceive, but it's also in how we do things. So therefore, that discussion is very much tied into how we understand that pasuk. It's also important to appreciate that the pasuk, the Gemara also tells us, is one of the sources of the idea of imitating God. The Torah says explicitly many times, 8 times in Sefer Dvarim alone, "V'alachta b'drachah," we're supposed to walk in God's path. But the Gemara in Shabbos also suggests that this is another iteration of that, that the Vandeyu should be read, "Ani v'hu," we and God together, we are following, I'm following God. So the main example of that, the Gemara says, is the idea of chesed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Baal Chesed and a Baal Rachmanis, and that we're supposed to try to emulate that and imitate that. So the Targum says in that pasuk that Evnil and Mikdash shall build a Beis HaMikdash, and those who suggest that we talk about building a Beis HaMikdash, so we mean also that we have to make ourselves into a Mikdash, and the way we do that is by excelling at Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, Ben Adam L'Makom. So we imitate God's Midos as the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and that we try to show our Ben Adam L'Makom also is something that we take very seriously and that we want to do at the highest possible level. But also the idea of imitating God, the Shechter and Hesefer and Nefesh HaRav, where he quotes many ideas from Rav Soloveitchik, he has a whole kuntzus there about Valachta B'Drachah, about how we are bidden to imitate God, and one of the examples he brings beyond what Chazal say about Chesed, he also adds that there are many other ways as well, and that one of them is the idea of having a sense of humor that we referred to before. The idea of being able to joke is also Mimidus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Gemara says in the beginning of Avodah Zarah that the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's day, he spends time playing with the Leviathan. So Salvechik commented, why is that something that we need to be told about? You know, why is that an important part of how we're supposed to perceive the Ribono Shel Olam? And that is Salvechik commented, apparently at a Levaya, that the idea is, it's a part of imitating God, that we should understand that we shouldn't take everything so seriously, that we shouldn't think that everything is a time for being perceived as the biggest crisis and the biggest obstacle, and we have to be able to laugh at some things. We have to be able to understand that not everything is as big of a crisis as we might think. And that, presumably what he was getting at is that is a part of Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because a sense of humor is a sense of perspective, of seeing how things fit, of recognizing what's a big deal and what isn't. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has the ultimate perspective. He sees the whole world in perfect understanding, and he knows how everything comes together, and we can't see it like that, but we can strive to. Maybe that's something, again, we'll try to expand on a little bit as we get closer to Purim. But it also ties into the parsha from that idea of Zekeli V'Yadayu, so it's relevant to our Hidden Mitzvah discussion, it's also relevant to the humor discussion, appreciating also what that could mean in terms of us and practice. And it'll also just add in terms of synergy. So Eli pointed out, I think I misspoke before, I said that Eli pointed out the language of the Ramban, the source of Issa. That was actually Menachem who pointed that out, that the language of the source of Issa is in the Ramban earlier when talking about the tefillah that went off the path a little bit. So Shkreich to Menachem for pointing that out. Eli made a different observation for synergy, that later on the Torah Tmima has a discussion about the Tosef HaShabbos and about the purpose of Tosef HaShabbos. and about the idea that it has to be done in a way that is clearly connected to Shabbos. So if you got a chance to see that, great. Brunetta, I can send that out to the group so you can see where that reference is. And that will be a little added synergy in a parsha that already has much synergy to add to us together with its drama and comedy and music. So hopefully we should get as much as we can out of this very packed parsha. We should have a true Shabbos of Shira, a Shabbos of song that will uplift us and inspire us. And I look very forward again to picking up on Sunday. Everyone should have a safe and healthy, inspiring Shabbos. And God willing, I will see you soon.